Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalzo. I'm here with Josh and Henry as always. And this is episode 19 of our inaugural Arsenal podcast. And I can't quite believe we're going to hit 20, boys. It's remarkable. Remarkable.
We haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, and you sound very confident. You're going to jinx us now.
Yes. No, that is true. That is true. Given the news I've just got from my car, the fact that we may hit 20 is in severe doubt because I'm in very bad mood. But there we go. Thankfully, Arsenal are in a good mood after their 3-0 victory on Thursday night against FK Östersund. It was one of the more boring 3-0 wins that I've had to sit through in recent years. But Josh, what were your kind of preliminary thoughts on the result and on the performance?
I mean, a win is a win, and I don't want to take anything away from the fact that it was a win. I didn't really enjoy watching the game. I didn't enjoy doing the player ratings. There was just not a lot of joy in the game. It was like sitting in the office and just doing your day's work and not really getting any fun out of it. I still think the only really good piece of play that we saw was when Ozil and Mkhitaryan interchanged for Ozil's goal. The rest of it was just kind of bleh.
It was as if Arsenal knew that they were going to win, so they couldn't be bothered to do anything good. And Östersund knew that they were going to lose, so they couldn't be bothered to do anything but be bad. And the kind of collective insipidness just cancelled each other out, really. It was, it was pretty boring. Henry, did you find it a bit more interesting, or are you like me?
I mean, I thought they, for the most part, they played better football than us. I thought they actually played well, considering that they haven't played a lot recently. I thought their keeper had a shocker, especially for Nacho Monreal's goal. But otherwise, I was relatively impressed.
From
an Arsenal perspective, I thought it was an awful game, though. I'm in agreement with you. It was a tough watch, to say the least.
Yeah, the first 15 or 20 minutes, I thought Östersund were really terrible, just by how deep they were lying and how easily they were giving the ball away. But there was a decided moment, maybe about 20, 25 minutes in, where they clearly just made a decision to not be so stupid and defend so deep. Yeah, press a bit high up the pitch. And actually,
because they realised we weren't actually that good either, or we're not that good.
Yeah, exactly. They actually did something, and surprise, surprise, Arsenal panicked and couldn't deal with the change in tactics.
They realised that Elneny can't, take the ball on the turn and drive past their midfield.
Yeah. I actually wrote an article for another site this last week talking about how I increasingly believe that the most important position in football is the pressure-eluding central midfielder. As in somebody who can take the ball under pressure and then move forward with it, especially as more and more teams are pressing high up the pitch. And it's fairly obvious that Arsenal don't have that player. Or at least...
Well, they do. They have two, really, in Santi Cazorla and Jack Wilshere. It's just they're not really in the team, or they don't really fit our team because of the way we play.
No, I mean, I kind of don't really count Cazorla anymore just because...
Yeah, fair enough.
There's a high chance that he won't play again, and Wiltshire is that kind of player, but he's probably a bit more attacking.
I'd agree with that. Also.
He's not that kind of the Sergio Busquets or even the Toni Kroos who can receive the ball under real pressure, but also is willing to sit deep. And I think Östersund kind of figured that out after about 25 minutes. That actually, this Arsenal team, they're not very good on the ball. If we just run around a bit, we might cause them a few problems. But there we go. Let's go through the goals. The first goal was it the Nacho Monreal rebound?
Yeah.
And there was actually some fairly decent work from Alex Iwobi for once.
I was actually going to say, yeah, go on. He kind of rushed the first one, but then after he got the rebound, I was really happy with the way when he slows down and shields the ball with his body, he puts himself in really good positions, and he did that in the box very well. And it was his shot that led to Monreal popping up, which he just has a knack for doing all of a sudden. Iwobi deserves a lot of credit for that goal. It came because of his determination and his knowing his own strengths.
Yeah, and his feet have always been quick. So whenever he does receive the ball, you know, in tight, congested areas in the penalty area. He has always been good at getting that yard of space. The problem is, once he gets it, he usually fluffs his opportunity, whether that be a pass or a shot.
Decision-making is his weakness. I mean, there was an occasion during the game where he had about 10 yards of space to run into, and he cut back, and I jumped up, and I thought, just keep running! Just keep running! You've got an element of athleticism too. You just keep running.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts when he cuts back and gives it backwards. It drives me up a wall.
I think this is something that's been true with many an Arsenal winger, especially. Particularly the quick ones. They just don't run with the ball properly. They're so... I assume Wenger's taught them to not dribble at defenders. Because they just never do it. They always come back inside and then pass it backwards. I'm like, you're so quick and direct. Just run at them and see what happens.
You know who did it really well is Joel Campbell, who we should not have gotten rid of because he was our difference maker.
This proves my point that the only one who could do it well, Wenger, that they got rid of. Lucas Perez, that's another. He was deceptively direct as well, and he's gone.
Mm.
So here we go. There's no direct players.
Mavericks.
Mavericks,
and they paid the price for it, I guess.
Yeah.
I used to think
he's another Maverick as well.
Yeah.
I used to think that Iwobi was that kind of direct player, though. It seemed like he had no problems driving into the teeth of the defense, and I don't see that anymore. I don't know if it's been drilled out
This is what I'm saying.
I think it's just a case of we've always had this, I call it an issue, whereby we always seem to want to give the ball to our best player during a move. When Alexis was here, it seemed everything had to go through Alexis. When Fabregas was here, it seemed the same. It's just a case of, give him the ball because he can make something happen. And I think that was true for everyone in the team, not just Iwobi, to his credit.
But Walcott got less and less direct as well as he got older.
But in my opinion, though, he never suited the way that we played. We never played a counter-attacking brand of football. I mean, his strengths in our system were clever runs off the ball and his finishing. And
that's true. His
only uses within our system, in my opinion.
That's true. I still have dreams about those odd performances against Barcelona that he put in that were just like...
The Liverpool goal, I remember. That was the one occasion where we actually went on a counter-attack and he scored, and then I don't really want to know about the rest of the evening, but that goal still lives in the memory.
Yeah, and the Spurs one when we won 5-2.
Oh, Van Persie, and he came out of the picture nowhere, and it was a lovely deft chip finish.
Yeah, because we went...
Friedel.
I think we went 2-0 down, and Walcott was in a really bad run of form, I remember. And the fans were absolutely laid into him, like as Arsenal fans do. And then he ends up putting in an excellent performance. But anyway, we've been sidetracked by Theo Walcott again. What a surprise!
Theo.
I think that shows the kind of interest that we all have in this Östersund tie. He's just not that interesting. Obviously, Arsenal's next game, having not been in the FA Cup fifth round this weekend, is not until next Thursday, also against Östersund. Henry, do you expect Wenger to make a myriad of changes with the Carabao Cup in mind and with the tie pretty much wrapped up?
Yeah, when is the Carabao Cup final? Is it
the
Sunday. Sunday or Saturday?
The Sunday
so
after the
Thursday.
Thursday
and Sunday. Yeah, I'd expect a few changes. I'm not sure. I mean, Ospina is likely to play in the Carabao Cup final as well, so he might get a couple of games, or you might see Macy. I don't think we'll see Bellerin or Monreal. I'd expect to see Holding, possibly Mertesacker, and a few youngsters, possibly Nketiah, Rhys Nelson as well. I think you'll see a few youngsters, but I would like to see some insurance on the bench just to make sure, because I don't want another Nottingham Forest incident, whereas if something, touch wood, goes horribly wrong, we at least have some form of quality on the bench to... resurrect the situation.
Yeah, I think it's the likes of Mesut Ozil, isn't it, who played on Thursday. I'd be very surprised to see if he was in, even on the bench. I thought what was interesting was neither Jack Wilshere nor Lauren Koscielny were even in the squad on Thursday. I think they travelled with the team, but they definitely weren't on the bench. I definitely think, you know, two very injury-prone players. Wenger's just thinking, well, I can give them 2 weeks off right in the middle of the season here, I absolutely don't blame him. I think it's the right decision ahead of a Carabao Cup final that Aaron Ramsey is doubtful for, so Jack Wilshere may end up starting in the heart of that midfield, he's going to have a lot of work to do. Josh, what players would you like to see next Thursday? I guess obviously the youngsters, but are there any other players who you would be particularly interested to have an eye on?
Yeah, Sead Klasnik. I don't know what he did to get so banished from the team, but honestly, he was probably my favorite player to watch early in the season because he brought everything that I've always wanted Arsenal to have. And then I can't help but feel that we're missing that exact same stuff that he brought because we're not playing him anymore.
Do you think he was a tad too direct for Wenger?
So probably.
Theo.
I get that Monreal stole his spot. I have no problem with that. Monreal's been fantastic. But why don't you start Klasnik at Östersund? I don't understand that bit.
That didn't make sense.
You've got Monreal. He's had injury problems. He's older. He's going to have to play a big part going down the stretch. And you've got this other guy, this guy who was in the Bundesliga Team of the Year last year for fantastic work, and you just won't play him. I think it comes down to him thinking that he can't play left back. And I don't understand that one bit because he played him at center back. And he'll play him everywhere except left back. I feel like he's just convinced himself without any backing that he just can't play him. I don't know. It baffles me. I would hope that he would be out there against Östersund in the second leg, but this is Arsenal, and stranger things have happened and will continue to happen.
I mean, I think he'll play against Östersund simply because, as you said, Monreal's been playing so well recently. So I'm not actually really concerned because I'm actually very, very happy that we've got such quality depth at that position moving forward. I mean, obviously the concern is that does Wenger see him as a left back, but I do. Hopefully that translates to Wenger or whoever's managing next season.
But the point of depth is you have to let it do its work. But
the thing is, with the game at Östersund, we had such a big break. Why not let those big guys play? And then we can now set it up perfectly so that all these depth players can play in this game before the Carabao Cup final.
I mean, I get that, but I don't get why you don't let Klasnik, because he hasn't turned to Klasnik for hardly anything. Against Crystal Palace, when Monreal got hurt, he put Maitland-Niles in first. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know why you've shunned this player who, again, if somebody knows what he's done wrong, I would love to hear it, because I really don't know what he could have done that would push him so far out of favor that he can't even get first subs to Monreal. It goes to Maitland-Niles instead. I don't get that, and I can't help but feel that there's something else there. Because I like the depth that we have, and I've said before, this is a problem that I like that we have, but you have to give it a chance to work better than what it is now, and the only way you do that is by letting them put pressure on each other, and that doesn't happen if you just let this one guy take the entire role in every competition, and the other guy's just kind of there just in case. That's not how depth is supposed to work. It's supposed to work where you can interchange players, and they're supposed to have this internal competition that I don't think he's letting exist.
Yeah, it just seems a bit illogical to then bring, well, maybe not illogical. I guess the balance is to bring Monreal off early, which is what he did do, didn't he? I think it was just after the third goal he brought Monreal off for Klasnik. So I guess that's kind of Wenger taking the middle ground of those two viewpoints of who should have started or how should the depth be used.
But for the most part, Arsenal do play their depth players, if you will, in these competitions season. So, I think the game at Östersund was an anomaly considering the Europa League is now our priority. Let's not beat around the bush with that. And we've now, touch wood, wrapped up the tie. So I can see the point of concern, but then again, I'm not particularly bothered.
Yeah, I think Wenger was more keen to have this Thursday coming as a definite opportunity to rest players with the Carabao Cup final coming after. So, admittedly, I don't think there's that much drop-off between Klasnik and Monreal, and it's obviously at a position that doesn't have a huge influence on the game. It's not like central midfield or you know, you're not like swapping out Mesut Ozil for, you know, some young kid. There isn't that much between the two players, but I wonder if Wenger was just extremely keen to give rest to the likes of Koscielny and Wiltshire, so that's why your Maitland Niles and your Callum Chambers played, but then ensure that they won the tie by two or three goals to now go and play the proper kids and the proper reserves on Thursday so he can rest the likes of Monreal for Sunday's Carabao Cup final, which I think could well be the biggest game of the season, at least until the Europa League campaign gets going. So I don't know. It will be interesting to see what Wenger does this Thursday, because, like you said, if Östersund score an early goal, suddenly, you know, this is Arsenal. They're brilliant at capitulating when the pressure's on, and I would not put it past them to suddenly falter if Östersund do get an early goal. So maybe he keeps a couple of big players on the bench, but you know, we'll have to see. That is Wenger's decision, and I'm sure it will be baffling as ever. Finally, who do you fear most in the Europa League draw? Is it Dortmund or Atletico Madrid, or is it Napoli? Even for me, it's Napoli, just because of the amount of goals that they can score. I think they could really rip Arsenal apart. But are there any teams who you are especially frightened of?
I would say Dortmund, because I feel like they have an added reason to want to beat us, because we took Mislintat, we took Aubameyang, and they made it quite clear they weren't very pleased with that. Plus, all of a sudden, Batshuayi is the greatest.
It's unbelievable.
The greatest thing to happen to the world of football.
Batman.
So, yeah. So I worry, just because we have a history with them, and we did give them added reason to want to beat us. But obviously Napoli worries me too, and Atletico Madrid, of course, does too, because their defense is pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, Dortmund are the perfect team to beat Arsenal. You know, like I was saying before, they like to press high up the pitch. Arsenal just flounder whenever somebody runs near them, they just start to panic. So in terms of the makeup of the team, Dortmund are... they're the kind of team that you would create to beat Arsenal. But for me, it's Napoli, just because of their pace and their fluidity in those attacking plays. You know, Dries Mertens, Insigne, Marek Hamsik, they've got some brilliant players, and Jorginho as well in midfield. So we'll have to see. It's a long way off. Hopefully the draw is kind. Obviously, Manchester United last year won the Europa League, and they didn't really play anybody of that much note until the final when they played Ajax. So you never know, Arsenal might get lucky and see a few of the big boys drop out to one another. Is there anything you want to say on either of these games before we take a break and move on?
I would like to... This was Maitland-Niles' inaugural run into the central midfield, and quite frankly, I was rather disappointed with him. I get that it was his first time sort of out there in this role that he really wants to play. So I didn't mind that he was sort of taking more chances, because I do criticize players like Elneny who don't take chances. But I didn't think he did a very good job protecting the ball or even winning the ball back. I know there was a stat of how well he did recovering the ball, but there were some times where he was really overrun in midfield. And this is stuff that I'm sure he'll learn from. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that he's as ready for a really prominent role in the midfield as some people think he is, especially not if it means putting him in over Granit Xhaka, and I had to get that in there.
And there it is.
I do...
Go on. Oh, sweet. I think he's... Maitland-Niles is another one who'll start the second leg next week. And probably in central midfield as well, I'd imagine. More minutes in that position, because I think there is obviously a plan to give him a role per se in that area of the park moving forward.
Mm. Yeah, I think it was clear to see that was his more natural position. He just looked more comfortable in centre midfield than he did when he plays out on the flank. There were moments of, I guess, complacency, I guess, would be a good way to say it, in possession, especially deep in his own half. And he's always been extremely composed on the ball, and sometimes that composure slips.
To a fault,
sometimes he becomes too composed on the ball, to the extent that he's so relaxed that actually ends up losing possession or he puts his teammates in trouble, because he will pass it to them thinking that they're quite happy to have it under pressure, because he's so happy to have it under pressure, but actually they don't want that ball. And Arsenal collectively lose the ball, and that's when trouble happens. I thought for the most part he was fairly decent. He wasn't quite as good as I thought he was, but or thought he might be. I thought he really might take the game by the scruff of the neck, but I definitely think he was better than El Nene. And he is very quick. I mean, this is the real, I guess the real arguing point against Xhaka is the disparity in their mobility. I think that there are certainly, you know, pros and cons to both players, but where the real difference lies is the fact that Maitland-Niles can really cover ground. Now, I don't think he's a better player than Xhaka, and I don't think he should be starting ahead of Xhaka. But if you were to make an argument that Maitland-Niles should start over Xhaka, it starts, you know, it all stems from his greater athleticism and his greater ability to cover the ground without the ball, because it is exceptional, and he made a few really strong recovering runs where he was slightly out of position or somebody got caught, and it was often him who was you know, filling in the gaps thanks to his outstanding speed, really. I guess just before we wrap up, we should touch on Danny Welbeck. It wasn't his best performance. Henry, I like yourself and many others, seem to, I guess, make not an excuse, but reason the fact that he's played. How many minutes did he play against Spurs? Was it 4, 5 minutes? Something like that.
Oh, that's something like that.
Yeah, that's basically all he's played since January.
Yeah.
Is that enough of a reason to justify his fairly rusty performance?
He should have played better. I thought some of his touches were poor and some of his basic fundamentals were poor against Östersund. Yeah. That's something I don't think anyone could deny. But what I would say is that just give him, to say one more chance sounds a bit dramatic, but he's unlikely to feature heavily moving forward as the season progresses. He's going to serve as our third choice striker. And as I've said to you two numerous times on this podcast or in between breaks, he's a player to me that better serves as a role player, if you will, like a Ji-Sung Park or Darren Fletcher at Manchester United. We used him effectively, in my opinion, away at Stamford Bridge earlier this season. He's honest, he's hardworking, he's a bit of a presence, if you will, and he can chip in with a goal, but he's not someone that I want playing week in, week out.
Yeah, and I think that is probably true of quite a lot of Arsenal's players. If you see them as what they are, role players, not necessarily, you know, fully fledged starters, then actually they become
far more
valuable.
And there's nothing really
wrong
with that if you have a few players like that. You can't have a squad of players, but if you have a few players like that, I don't see any issue with that.
No, I mean, Jason Park is always the example that I go to. Like you said, you know, he was Sir Alex Ferguson's first name on the team sheet whenever they played, you know, like a Real Madrid in the Champions League or something. It was always Grison Park because he was that perfect for that role of the scrappy, industrious, energetic midfielder. But, you know, you sacrifice a bit in quality, but in those kind of games, Ferguson was happy to do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is a slight aside. We'll come back in just a moment, and really, because it's a slightly down time in terms of the news cycle, given that Arsenal are out of the FA Cup, we're just going to have a free run. We've got one or two questions to ask from Twitter, and then we will see where it takes us. So we'll see you on the other side. Hello and welcome to the second part of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew, as always, and I'm with Henry and Josh. And we have a few Twitter questions, a couple from this week and a couple that were sent in just a little bit late last week. So, Henry, do you want to fire away?
Yeah, I'm happy to fire away. A lot of them kind of revolve around personnel, as transfers seem to occupy a huge part of the sports media industry nowadays, but that's natural. First question comes in from Arsenal for Life with the at of AFC1886 underscore for life. Do you really think Arsenal will go and make 5 or 6 signings this summer? There is so much flying around lately saying we need certain areas strengthened. Also, will Wenger finally accept the feat and step down or see out his last year? Should we kind of leave out that last bit of the question because we've addressed it so often?
Yeah, I think the No, I don't expect Arsenal to go and sign 5 or 6 players. I never expect Arsenal to go and sign 5 or 6 players. Hmm. It may happen. I'm not going to be holding my breath for it. It needs to happen. I'd like it to happen, but what needs to happen and what actually does happen with this club are very rarely the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I
what do you think, Josh?
I think it could just be. Maybe January gave me a false sense of what's to come, but it really felt like things were different for Arsenal in the transfer window for the first time in a very long time. You could tell that there were other people controlling the transfer business, and to me, that's really promising. I would expect that we get 3 players. I would expect a winger, a defensive midfielder, and a center back. I could see it being 4. I would prefer it to be 4. My ideal would be Malcolm, Leon Bailey, Max Meyer, and then I'm still searching for the perfect center back to fix our situation. But I think it could happen. I mean, again, it's hard to base an opinion off of 1 transfer window, but I'm optimistic as always.
That's fair enough.
Certainly, if you are going to take the optimistic viewpoint, you're depending on Mislintat and Sanyehi and the like having an influence, aren't you?
Yes, yeah.
I mean, I would add to that, I think we'll probably target a goalkeeper in the summer as well. Mm-hmm. But besides that, I completely agree. I think we may see a couple of fullbacks targeted as well. I mean, they're supposedly very high on them. Jordi Osei-Tutu, who might play against Östersund next week, but we'll see. We'll see. You mentioned a centre-back, the January transfer window. Konstantinos Mavropanos. If I've got that right, I'm so proud of myself.
Yeah, no, you've nailed it.
A question came from John Wigg, who's at John Wigg on Twitter, simply. When is Wenger going to play Mavropanos? He looked good, or he has looked good, in his under-23 performances thus far. And let's face it, he says, one of Koscielny or Mustafi has to be dropped. I'd be interested to get your opinion on this, because apparently Wenger wasn't a fan at first. Apparently he was going to go out on loan, and then he was a fan, and it all was a bit controversial. What do you think, Josh?
No, I think he has looked really good. And I think what's important with finding a centre-back to replace either Koscielny or Mustafi, because I agree, they're both too similar. They leave us exposed, and I think we need somebody that can sort of just chill back there, like a Mertesacker type. And
superior athleticism. Just quick.
Oh, sorry. Of course. Yeah. Which, you know, I'd love to say it's Callum Chambers, but he's shaping up to be the same type where he's a ball playing center back that pushes forward. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's always gonna be a place for that, but I haven't seen enough of Mavropanos. What I have seen, I really like, and I wonder if we might see him against Östersund, because, I mean, the question was right. He has looked really good, and this is a good chance to be able to throw him out there and see how he handles real competition.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's looked very good. Obviously, when you're playing for the under-23s, the quality of opposition does have to be, you know, temper conclusions drawn a little bit. But certainly he's made strides, and like you said, Wenger initially wanted to send him out on loan, and then a week later he said no, he's good enough to stay. So he must be doing something right in training that Wenger likes. And if we are to see him this season, I think it will be this Thursday. I think if he doesn't play on Thursday, I'd be surprised if we see him playing for the senior team for the rest of the year, really. But hopefully, it may be coming off the bench. I don't know. I mean, maybe. whether he would start ahead of Rob Holding, I don't know. Probably 50-50. But I would certainly like to see it. In terms of replacing Koscielny Mustafi, I don't think either need to be dropped at the moment. I just think that's just not right. I just think that's wrong.
I mean,
I
don't think. Whilst I think they're inconsistent, I don't think. I completely agree with what you guys have said for the most part in terms of he simply just doesn't have enough exposure. I personally haven't seen enough of him to be able to determine, yes, he needs to go in immediately and become a stalwart in our back line. We just can't jump to that conclusion.
No, I agree.
But for me, it's a case of I don't think he's going to play against Östersund simply because we have good depth for that game in that position, considering moving forward. I wouldn't like Mertesacker or Holding or Chambers to go up against a Napoli or a Atletico Madrid. But for Östersund in this next leg, I'm happy for Holding and Mertesacker to go out. So I don't think we'll see him. But George Bird, who has an encyclopedic knowledge of everything with regards to the Arsenal Academy and is a good follower on Twitter, has said he's been impressive.
He's a brilliant follower.
Yeah, so, but he's been very good, according to George, so it'll be interesting to see how he does next season. Obviously, we've got Mertesacker retiring to take charge of the Academy next season, and Koscielny's only getting older, as is Monreal, and we've obviously experimented with three or five at the back, and we might return to that possibly in the future, who knows, but I don't think we'll see him this season. But it's an interesting question considering the personnel and what we've discussed previously in terms of requiring a centre-back as such. The final question, again, another centre-back comes into play, a question from Saul at Fitz958. Any possibility of getting Stefan de Vrij on a free? Also, he asks, how perfect would Fabinho fit next to Xhaka?
I like that he said next to Xhaka instead of
Xhaka. You take
Fabinho would fit perfectly. Fabinho would fit perfectly instead of Xhaka.
No,
I think
yeah, it's
what
a typo. It's a typo,
put.
Josh. I'm kidding.
Wait, now go I'm on, confused. Josh. Did he say next to Xhaka or did he say instead of?
Fit next to. I was only messing.
Okay, good.
He should have said instead of.
No, I mean, like I've said, I think you've got, once you get a guy that can sit behind either Xhaka, Wilshere, Ramsey, whoever you want to put in those two more forward-sitting central roles, you just have to have somebody back there like Fabinho, or I think Max Meyer deserves to be thrown in there too, who win the ball back but do more than that. And I would love to have Fabinho back there. As far as Stefan De Vrij,
I don't know.
I mean, why not? Frees are always great. They save us money, which apparently is more important than I ever thought. But
value is important. I recently did a poll, though. Speaking of value, I put a poll up with regards to, would you rather have Timo Horn for 6 million euros or Jan Oblak for 90 million euros? And surprisingly, Jan Oblak won by, it was close, granted, but it was like 55-45. 55% would have preferred Oblak for 90 million euros. I thought, what on earth is this? The value, this idea of value has gone completely out the roof.
People want the highest money, the highest, whoever costs the most, because it's obviously a sign of quality.
Yep, that's what I do when buying a bottle of wine. Ignore the name and look at the prices every time. Never buy the cheapest, always buy the second cheapest. I mean, on De Vrij, I mean, I've only really seen him for Switzerland. I've never really...
Switzerland? He's a Dutch international.
Oh, is he Dutch? Who am I thinking of?
You probably... actually, I have no idea.
No, I'm thinking of the Danish guy. I'm thinking of Simon Kjær, the Danish dude.
The one with blonde hair, the one who looked like a young Seb Larsson.
Yeah, I don't even know who he is then. Who is he? He plays for Lazio.
He plays for Lazio. Is it? Do you want me to take over now, Andy? Are you happy for me to take over?
Does his contract run out then?
Apparently so. I mean, I don't know for sure, and I'm not in a real position to comment.
What is he on FIFA? Because that's always a pretty good...
I think he's an 83 rated on FIFA.
Josh, sign him up then.
I don't know why I know that.
I'm in no position to comment on him and his real life abilities, because I don't really have the time to watch a lot of football, although I can comment, or I feel I'm in a better position to comment about Fabinho, because I'm actually in the middle of writing a scouting report about him, simply because I'd like to have some more knowledge about players that we acquire, rather than just go off the basic Twitter highlights and these basic Twitter assumptions.
YouTube highlights.
Yeah. And
I found an amazing website that allows you to watch full games from the whole season. Yeah, so you can kind of like go back and watch, like, so instead of just watching the best bits of a player, because they're always going to look good because they're the best bits, you can actually watch the whole game and, you know, watch Granit Xhaka cock up.
So I've actually just became an expert on Stefan de Vrij by going to foodhead.com.
Have you just watched all his games in the space of 10 seconds?
I think it's Stefan, actually, not Stefan.
Well, see... Yeah, so, I actually know him personally.
That's the level of expert we're talking about, Andy. He doesn't even need to refer to him by his real name.
So if I were to rate him on a scale of 0 to 100, I would rate him about an 83, like I said. I'd say his defending is about an 85. He's got decent pace. I'd give him about a 68.
This is sad. This is sad. What have we become?
His heading could improve. It's only about a 78. I think he could do a bit more in the air. But
yeah. Andy, you said didn't expect to get to episode 20. This is the demise of the podcast.
I'm not sure we're going to make it.
But this was as of 12 hours ago. It might have changed since then. He might have improved. Oh. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Fabinho, and I actually watch a few of the games on YouTube. You'll need to send me that website though, Andy, because that could be useful, because I've watched a few games of his recently, and even if you watch games, it's still difficult to kind of put a player into context when you consider I'm not familiar for the most part with Ligue 1 or Monaco's tactics or those two factors more than anything. But I've watched a few games and they tend to line up with Jean Moutinho and him as central midfielders, and they tend to play quite high up the field, it seems. I'd prefer him to sit deeper than what I've seen him do recently, simply because it leaves, there just seems to be huge.
A peek behind the curtain, the reason why Henry's flailing is because I was flailing, and he can see on Skype that I'm going mental. That's just because my housemates just got engaged, and they've just come into my door showing the ring on her finger, so I'm in a happy mood for them. I don't know if they can see me. Yeah, they can see me. They're now laughing. Yeah.
Get them on, Andy. Get them on. It'll increase engagement. Go for it.
Next podcast, we'll have an interview with my housemate and his now fiance.
Josh, we've been replaced. I think we can sit the next one out. It can be an Andy special. 20th. It could just be self-titled "I Didn't Expect This" episode 20.
Yeah, we're definitely not making it to episode 20 now, are we? We've not got a chance.
But can I finally do my evaluation on Fabinho?
Go ahead.
But personally, from what I've seen, strong in the tackle, and the mistakes I've seen him make, I've seen every footballer make, just interesting, some risky passes, incorrect passing decisions. But for the most part, I like what I've seen. I need to watch some more games of him. But that's my aim going into the summer in particular, just to analyse players that we're linked with in more detail, simply than just writing an article post-signing saying he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
He is if he replaces Granit Xhaka.
You're feeling good, so you just got to throw those in there, don't you?
Just little quick strike remarks.
I've been on the defensive with Xhaka. I've actually put two articles out this week defending him, because our writers at Pain in the Arsenal have been extra zealous with bringing him down.
So I've had to
counteract them, since I'm the only person that will stand up for him.
I specifically left one of our worst articles about Xhaka for Josh to edit and publish,
and it hasn't even been finished yet. It's just hanging in the back of my head. Yeah. I know it's going to be there.
I mean, there aren't any more questions anymore, guys. So unless you have anything that you would like to discuss, we can leave Andy go. Let Andy go and celebrate with his housemates, celebrate their engagement. And unless there's anything else calling us. It's been a short one, actually. I'm not sure. Probably been going for the best part of, 35 minutes or so, 40 minutes or so. But what do you want to do?
Yeah, give or take.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I'm not signing off, Andy. It's your job.
Josh, why don't you sign off? You can sign off nice and positively for us.
Can you sign off with like a long paragraph like you did on the last podcast about Xhaka?
I wish I
could just like get a soundbite about that and just play it just constantly.
I have it. I have an
Do
MP3
you?
Of that, yes.
Fantastic. when he next scores, you should just tweet that out.
You can't actually tweet MP3 files. I tried.
You should convert it into something so that you can.
I think I'll have to upload it to SoundCloud and then share it repeatedly.
You should do that. Save it for the opportune moment.
So I'm signing off then.
Yeah, go ahead. It's been a bit more relaxed, but this is why we're giving it to you to sign off.
All right. Well, I've never signed off before, but thanks for joining us for our 19th episode of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Josh. You can find us all on Twitter. I've been here with Andy and Henry. I don't know their Twitter handles offhand, but you can find us all at paininthearsenal.com. We'll be back before the final of the Carabao Cup, and we'll be talking about how Granit Xhaka is going to put in a man of the match performance that nobody can deny.
He might be better than Bakayoko. I'll give him that.
Oh, he is. He is. No, that's a fact. You can ask the FIFA player ratings about that too. Other than that, have a good one out there, and look forward to Ostersunds. Goodbye.